Welcome to the final episode of NHL Draft Class for the 23-24 season. I'm Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with Mike Morreale. Mike, have you recovered from your July 4th celebrations to have one more talk about the 2024 draft class?
I am here. I am ready to go, Adam. I've had my four cups of coffee this morning, getting ready for a huge, big guest coming on the draft class. But yes, 4th of July was outstanding. Went for my 4-mile run, as we do as a family every season. It's a little race that we do. So that was fantastic. Enjoyed it with family and friends, as I'm sure you did as well. To review the 24 NHL draft, Adam, what a guess. Craig Button, he does it for us each and every season. TSN director of scouting and former NHL general manager. We're going to tie it up with a bow right here, Adam, right here.
Craig Button, thank you so much for joining us today in NHL draft class. Now that the draft is over, are you taking a deep breath?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there was lots of lead up. I mean, you got game 7 on a Monday and then the first round of the draft on Friday and then free agency on Monday. There was so much going on and, you know, you almost feel like you're not doing anything, like you feel guilty for not doing anything after being kind of on that treadmill for like a good 2 months. And you guys know that as well as anybody.
So let's start at the top, Craig. Macklin Celebrini goes number one to the San Jose Sharks. What do you think? Does he have the goods to play and succeed in the NHL next season?
I definitely say yes. And even all I got to do is go back. 16-year-old in the USHL, dominant player, leads the league in scoring, the most valuable player. Then he goes to the NCAA with Boston University. Again, dominant player, wins the Hobey Baker's best player in the NHL. Now, he's the youngest player in those leagues, you know, for two consecutive years, and he's a dominant player. He's going, in my view, because he's so gifted and in so many different areas of the game, he's going to go in and I think unquestionably have individual success, much like Connor Bedard did this past season in Chicago. Will the team be able to reflect the individual success that Macklin has? No, they're not there yet. But what a beginning it's going to be for San Jose Sharks fans. We know how great the Shark Tank has been in previous years and with good teams in there, competitive teams. And not only Macklin, but also Will Smith coming in there and a host of other really good young players. That Shark Tank's going to be moving pretty rapidly and it'll be loud and energetic once again. And Macklin is just too good. He's too good.
You know, most of us had Beckett Senecky ticketed for that kind of probably 9-15 range. How much of a surprise was it to you when Anaheim stepped up to the plate and said at number 3 from the Oshawa Generals, Beckett Senecky? What do you think they saw that maybe us on the outside didn't to go after him at that point?
You know what? As I've had time to reflect on this, Adam, and I think when they called Beckett's name and then we saw the reaction of Beckett, how phenomenal was that? I mean, Beckett's reaction was phenomenal because, I mean, I think it showed that he was surprised, as a lot of people were. But as I took a step back and I started to reflect on it, we had those 6 defensemen that were all in that category. We didn't know who would be the first defenseman off the board, who would be the 6th defenseman off the board. So I think once I saw that they took a forward, I said, okay, so those 6 defensemen were not in consideration for the Anaheim Ducks. So now you're looking at a much smaller group. You're looking at a group of Demidoff, Aginla, Patton, maybe Hellenius is in that group. But once I eliminated those 6 defensemen, because that's exactly what Anaheim did, I said, okay, so now you're picking the best forward for your team in that spot. You know, so when I look at it and a team is going to draft a forward and they say we're going to draft a forward and not a defenseman, and it is, I mean, it was heavy. I mean, 6 of the first 12 picks were defensemen. So we knew that there was but now you eliminate Celebrini. Now you eliminate 6 defensemen. Now you're down to 5 players, you know, that you're looking at to draft. And I mean, I don't think anybody disagreed about Demidoff being like such a gifted mercurial talent, but when I look at Beckett and I see a player that might have some similarities to Corey Perry, maybe it makes more sense for the Anaheim Ducks to get a Corey Perry type than any other type of player, because we know what Corey meant to the Anaheim Ducks.
So you mentioned there, Craig,
And, you know, it was one of the most intriguing storylines was how many defensemen were going to go, not only first round, but in that top 15 range. And you did mention there's six out of the top 12. But I'm curious who had the biggest early steal here. I mean, the Devils, chief amateur scout Mark Dennehy called a 6'7" defenseman who skates like a ballerina in Anton Salayev at number 10, where the Devils chose him. And then the Minnesota Wild traded up one spot to make sure they got their guy in defenseman Z Bouyum, the University of Denver at number 12. Two good defensemen here that go, I don't know. Would you consider them a little late? And who do you think got the better bet here?
You know, it's interesting. So I think it's the lens that you look at it through. So depending on how you look at each of these players, you know, like, so full declaration, I thought Z was the, in my view, I felt confident saying that Z was the best defenseman in the draft. So you make that statement. So then it should follow, obviously, that I think that the Minnesota Wild did really got a terrific player at 12. So, you know, because that's the lens I'm looking at it through. When I look at Salayev, I look at how that blue line in New Jersey has been built. You have Luke Hughes, a real excellent offensive defenseman. You have Simon Nemitz, who's going to fill that role. We know Dougie Hamilton's a frontline player. So when you start to consider how you're trying to build out your blue line, you know, Seamus Casey is going to need a little time in the minors. Salaya just feels like a player that just fits. Like he's another piece of the puzzle for the New Jersey Devils, and somebody with that skating style. And he's a territorial aggressive player. And certainly we see how the playoffs are played. We see how good defensive teams are formed. You need players like Salayev. And I think that when he got there, probably the thing that I don't want to say hurt Salayev, but the lack of offensive projection in his game, I think was something that pushed him down a little bit in the draft. And certainly when you think about the other elements, he's unique. He's a unicorn. I've heard that term used a few times for Salaya. I would also suggest, Mike and Adam, that Sam Dickinson to the San Jose Sharks, when they made that trade to go from 14 to 11, this is how I looked at it. I said, they want a defenseman at 14. And they don't think they're going to get one of those six guys at 14. So they wanted to give themselves a real opportunity to get into the top 10, 11, 12. And certainly they were left with a decision and they took Sam Dickinson. So when you go and those four defensemen, when you think of 9, 10, 11, 12, Breck, Salaya, Dickinson, Bouyum, I mean, once it hit that point and the other teams made the decision to take forwards, those defensemen were not going to stay on the board. They just weren't. They're too good. So I just think that when you look at it through whatever lens you want to look at it through, it depends. I think Zeev has a lot of what Scott Niedermayer had in his game. I think Zeev can control the game. I think he can play left defense, right defense, superb skater. And a lot like Scott Niedermayer, all he does is win.
So, Craig, we've talked about, you know, with the defensemen, the big six, you know, Levshinov, Salayev, Bouyum, Dickinson, Zane Parak, and Carter Yakimchuk. So I think of that group, I don't know if Carter Yakimchuk, anybody had him being the second one after Levshinov. You know, he goes number seven to Ottawa ahead of Bouyum, Dickinson, Parak, Salayev. How much of a surprise was that for you? And what's Yakimchuk's ceiling, I guess, if he can fill out physically?
I think, Adam, that the first thing with Ottawa was is they were looking for a right shot defenseman. So Levshinov's off the board. So now it comes down to a decision between Yakimchuk and Erik Karlsson, or Zane Parekh. And so I thought Zane Parekh is a lot like Erik Karlsson. I think Yakimchuk's a lot like Bouchard. Now I'm talking at the draft stage. If they can turn out to be in like, you know, anywhere near those players at the NHL level, I mean, you got a good player. I also think they were looking for a little bit more physicality out of that pick at seven on the right shot defenseman. And I think that was the differentiation between Yakimchuk and Zane Parekh. I mean, Yakimchuk has a big shot. He's a bigger, more physically robust player. And I think that attracted, he became more attractive to the Ottawa Senators in that regard. I was talking to Dave Poulin, and I mean, he's the vice president of hockey operations for Ottawa. And he said they really wanted to become a little bit more physical in different areas of their team, on the wall, on the blue line. And I think that Carter absolutely, offers that element. So if you're looking for that element, I think now you see why they took Carter Yakimchuk.
Greg, you gave me, provided me with a fantastic story when I contacted you during the, I guess it was during the cup final, and I needed some input on some of the prospects, and we were discussing Cole Eiserman, and you gave me such a great anecdote about your dad and Al Arbor, and what the Islanders had to go through, or what they were considering in the 1977 NHL draft when they finally chose Mike Bossy at number 15. Just a fascinating story. And here we are, the 2024 NHL draft, the Islanders choosing at number 20. And lo and behold, here's Cole Eiserman, who many consider to be having the best shot in this draft class. And the Islanders do select Cole Eiserman. Just, I wanted to get your thoughts on that, that whole dynamic. Did he go a little later than you thought, or was he right in that range?
I was standing with Nick Forth, who coaches the National Team Development Program and coached that 2006 born group. And we were standing there talking, and, John Van Biesbroek was there and Pat Kelleher was there, and we were shocked. And so, the story about Bossy. So when it came to 15, I was standing there thinking, okay, maybe there's some symmetry here at 15. And he didn't go 15. The Red Wings took Michael Brancy, Nygaard. But then when it got to 20 and the Islanders, we all looked at each other and just started chuckling. We go, wow, I guess the symmetry is better for him going to the Islanders than it is going 15. To me, he's the best goal scorer in the draft. He broke Cole Caulfield's record, which I thought would be, Phil Kessel set the record back in 05 with 105 goals. Cole Caulfield broke it in 2019 with 126. And then Cole Eiserman broke it this year. When you think about goal scoring, and I think it's the hardest thing to do in the National Hockey League. And I think that when you have such a gift, and Cole has that gift, and what I kept hearing, and Mike, you and me talked about this, but I kept hearing was all the things that, like, well, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. Well, you're not drafting him for the things he doesn't do. In all my years, I've watched thousands of players get drafted over the years. I've never once watched an NHL team stand up after they drafted a player and go, yeah, we drafted this player, but we're really concerned about his defensive play. We're not so sure about his skating. We're not so sure he'll physically grow. Like, they're all excited about what the player offers. But these narratives, it becomes like a groundswell. And the groundswell, that I hear, it pales in comparison to the feelings that Cole Eiserman was going through. And he's trying to fix them. He's a competitor. He's a goal scorer. And I said this to him during the course of the year. I said, Cole, if there's anything you're guilty of, you want to be excellent every shift. And that's an inner drive. And that's maturity, just trying to find your way through things and understand that, hey, sometimes this shift isn't going to provide you the best goal scoring opportunity. And I think you're going to see a player really more settled next year after this year is all passed. I think Nick Ford did an outstanding job in just keeping Cole in a state of focus. And here's what you do, and we're going to celebrate what you do. I ran into the Eiserman family after the draft, after the first round on Friday, and they were over the moon. And I think that that's the biggest thing, that after a player gets drafted, everything in the past is gone now. Now it's all forward. And I think that with Patrick Waugh and with Lou Lamoriello, I think Cole's in a great spot to really develop his game. Much like Mike Bossy had that opportunity with Bill Torrey as the manager and Al Arbor as the coach with the Islanders back in 77.
Yeah, he had some contingent there too, over 55, yeah, over 75 people, family and friends. So it was great to see that happen for Cole. So you've been involved with the draft, I can't even count, Craig, how many times, but what impressed you most about Spear? And do you feel the NHL should consider that location each year for the draft now?
I'm going to answer the second question first. Yeah, yes, 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 on Spear. You heard so much about it, and we've seen glimpses of it from the outside. I hadn't been in it. And so I was expecting something really special and unique. It exceeded my expectations. And, when I first walked in, it just grabs you, and it's an attention grabber. And you're on the floor. And then I went to every level to watch it. and you're watching it from level two and level five and up at the top at level seven. And it really is something when you think about, you know, the components that go into the presentation. It is unique. All the players' pictures up. You know, you could never do that on a scoreboard in an arena. But the ability to put that, and then, you know, when a team is picking, they got glimpses of the city. You got highlights, and it was really, really, I think, unique. I think that the NHL, in terms of having the draft in Vegas and Sphere being such an integral part of it, you know, opens up a lot of different ideas for NHL. You know what I kept thinking about? Can you have an indoor Sphere game? Can you put an ice rink in Sphere and have a game? I was standing there on the floor trying to look, why couldn't they build ice? You know, call the ice makers. They do a great job. Can you imagine a hockey game in there? So I'm just thinking all kinds of possibilities. But what a fantastic, fantastic experience. I mean, I haven't stopped buzzing about it. Everybody, and you know, everybody keeps asking me about it. What was it like? What was it like? And certainly I'm going to go back and see a show there. But I think for the NHL, I mean, this was one of those home runs that, you know, that you'll celebrate for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm with you. People have asked me about it. I said, you know, words don't really do that place justice. I can still hear that trade horn in my sleep. So maybe we could turn the volume down on that a smidge. But yeah, other than that, I thought it was fantastic, everything about it. Going back to the actual draft itself, though, I shouldn't say hate, strong word. I'm not a fan of people who give their instant grades 5 minutes after the draft ends. This team did great, this team didn't, because in all honesty, you have no clue what you're talking about. To me, it's 5 years. You got to wait 5 years. Then you can have a really thoughtful analysis. So I want to ask you, Craig, 5 years from now, who's going to be the Braden Point, the Jason Robertson, the Jacob Slavin, the guy that we look at and said, geez, what did we all miss? How did this guy last into the second, third, fourth round, or even deeper? Who's a guy or a couple of guys that you would kind of say, okay, that's a quote-unquote steal when we look back 5 years from now?
Yeah, and Adam, I echo your thoughts. I mean, it's like going to a high school graduation when kids have graduated high school at 18 years of age and going, okay, we're going to grade out this high school graduation class, and here's who did really well. Like, it's a graduation day. It's a celebration of something that is the beginning of trying to achieve their dreams and goals. It's not a grade that gets put on it, and certainly. You're right. We'll know in that time frame how it's all turned out. We'll know who should have gone higher. We'll know who shouldn't have gone as high. That we know what the numbers are. You know, it's interesting when you ask me that. I was asked this question: who might be the steal of the draft? And it was hard for me not to say Cole Hutson again, because I felt Lane was that player back then. And it's hard for me not to say Lane. I think Cole was the 43rd pick in the draft to Washington, trying to get my, it might've been a little bit later than that, but it was this mid second round to Washington. But I watch Lane play, and I'm getting asked this question now about Lane. Do you think Lane can play in the NHL next year? Like, if you're going to get me to say no, like keep working at it, because there's no way I'm betting against those kids. They're too good. And ironically, coincidentally, Cole broke all Lane's records. So why I didn't bet against Lane? Why am I going to bet against Cole? You know, I think his abilities are really significant. So that's one player I know in the second round. I'm a big Carter George fan. I think that Carter George, going to the LA Kings as a goaltender, he's going to need some time. But I think he's got real significant elements to be a number one goaltender in the NHL. And I understand that goaltenders go a little bit later, and certainly goaltenders that aren't as tall might be a little bit lesser of a commodity. But I see a player that has a lot of different qualities that could lead him to be a really good. And I also think Bill Ranford in LA, I mean, I think there's goaltending coaches as good. I don't think there's any better than Billy. And I think that Carter being with Billy and his group will really be beneficial for himself. You know, one player that I really liked, and I had a good chance, I ran into him and had a good chance to talk to him, was Luca Morelli. He got drafted by the Columbus Blue Jackets late in the third round. And every time I went to the game, they had good players. They had Beckett, they had Ben Danford, who went further in the first round to the Toronto. But every time I went to a game, and every time I watched Oshawa play, and this is over the last 2 years, I kept leaving, wow, Luca, he's such a good player. He's so efficient. So you add, and the reason I say that is, like, that to me is Jacob Slavin. Like, he doesn't catch you with any kind of eye-popping, razzle-dazzle, flash and dash, but the plays are clean, they're efficient, they're strong. He beats pressure, the puck gets into the right areas of the ice, and you're waiting for a mistake to happen. You're waiting for a situation that challenges him in a way that you're kind of going, okay, you know, maybe he can't do that. And I think his brain and processing ability is outstanding. And you think about the way that he has those physical attributes, that all really works well for him on a going forward basis. You know, the one other player that I really came and I think that he's in, I think that when you get to the end, when you get to the playoffs, and you want a player that can really make a what I would call a real be a difference maker in when it counts in different ways, maybe not on the scoreboard, is Kamil Bednarik, and he went to the New York Islanders as well, and he like Cole, I think people were going in expecting that, oh, like he didn't do this, he didn't do that. What are you evaluating him on? He's such a strong two-way player. He competes. He's smart, and I just think a player such as him, you want them when the games are hard, when the situations are challenging, and you get those qualities that really show up in important ways when the games are a little bit bigger, a little bit harder, a little bit more challenging. And you know, if you're looking for him to be a big offensive player, I think you might be missing him. And I think he could be a Chandler Stephenson type. That's the type of player I think he could be like. So, you know, those are four players, a goalie, a couple of defenders, and a forward. And there's other ones. And certainly, I should ask you, Adam, and you, Mike, do you have a player that you think could really develop? Because I might be going, yeah, like that's another player that you could do. Because we all have a group of players that we really think highly of that didn't get drafted as high as maybe we thought they should have been.
So I'm glad you said that, because there is one other guy I wanted to ask you about, and that's Aaron Kiviharu, who went in the fifth
Oh
round of the
yeah.
Minnesota Wild. And there was a little video clip that the Wild put up, and Kiviharu
Yes.
shaking Bill Guerin's hand on the draft floor, and he said, "You got the steal of the draft." I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said to Billy Guerin, who I'm sure absolutely loved it because this is right up Bill's alley, he said, "You just got the steal of the draft." So let me ask you, he's a guy that, to me, you know, when I watched him before the knee injury that he had, you know, in the beginning of the season, that he looked like we could be talking about him in that group of the top end defensemen, the Booyams, the Yakimchuks, the Parayks, because of the skill, the maturity of the game. Obviously, the size is an issue, but when you watched Aaron Kiviharu before the injury, like, where did you anticipate him going in the fifth round? I thought for sure he would go earlier than that. I even had him in the first round because I thought teams would recognize, you know, the maturity in his game. Obviously, the size is the size, 5'9". You know, I don't know how much taller he's going to get, but there are a lot of nice elements in his game. Do you think, to steal Aaron's line, did the Wild get the steal of the draft with Kiviharu in the fifth round?
When you're able to draft a player of that talent, and let's make no, and there's no, I don't think anybody would argue that he's a very talented. He's got massive brain power. And you know, we talk about size, right? So we can go and measure a player and he's this tall or he weighs this much. One of the things that Aaron has always been able to do exceptionally well is be evasive, be elusive. And I think that's a real quality for a smaller player. If you're always taking contact, you're gonna have problems. He had a freak injury, and I think the only reason he went as late as he did, it wasn't because of the hockey ability. It was, okay, What is the medical report? I don't have access to the medical reports. I can't miss it. You know, at the U18 tournament, he was clearly probably at 50% of his capabilities. But where he wasn't falling short was in the thinking area and the competitive area. He was right there in all those areas. So, you know, you gotta, and again, you're trusting your medical staff. I'll tell you a quick story. We had Sean Chambers in Minnesota. We went to the Stanley Cup final in 1991, and he'd had some wonky knees. And you know, the medical report was, you know, maybe it's going to affect him and impact him. Anyway, we ended up trading him and plays for the Devils in 95, wins a cup. We couldn't wait to get him back in Dallas. So like we're like, that's, we want that guy like back. And he was part of our Stanley Cup team in 1999 and a big part of our Stanley Cup team in 1999. So, and it's the medical staff is looking at the reports and the physiologists are looking, okay, what can we do here? And you're making a judgment on it. But I think that Aaron is a hardworking, smart player. As I just mentioned, lots of brain power in his game and a big time competitor. And he's got a lot of confidence in himself. He's been a leader of that age group. He has been the leader of that 06 age group in Finland. And I think that, you know, you root for Aaron. You root for him because he's a great young person. His dad works for the Utah Hockey Club scouting and just a great family. And I think I don't think that that's unfounded confidence when he goes up to Billy Guerin. He believes that he knows all these players that were drafted much higher than him. He knows all those guys you mentioned, and he puts himself in that category as he should. And if the health and if he gets back and the knee gets back healthy and the leg gets back healthy, yeah, he could be that. He could definitely be that player, Adam.
I know you asked right before that question there, Craig, about some of our favorite players. Real quick, I mean, two of my favorite picks, second round, both by the Penguins. Harrison Brunick, the right-handed D, number 44 in the second round by the Penguins. Here's a kid that was injured late in the season, was invited and joined the U18s for Canada. I thought played a huge, huge role for that club. Big minutes played. He proved that he can play with the elite among his peers. So Brunick is a player, I think, fantastic pick there by the Penguins. And then, you know, two picks later, they take Tanner Howe, you know, an aggressive little 5'10", 184-pound, you know, forechecker. The kid goes in the corners. The kid does all the dirty work. Not a lot of talk about Howe. Maybe people didn't anticipate him maybe scoring a little more as captain. Obviously learned a lot from Connor Bedard, you know, last year. But I like Howe's approach to the game, his commitment to the game, what he brings to the table each and every game. And, you know, I think Howe and Brunick are two players sometime down the road that'll benefit the Penguins organization for sure. So those were two of my favorite picks among the draft, I guess the early rounds there. So looking
can
ahead,
I just say Harrison, ahead. I just want to say about Harrison real quick. I mean, South African born. So, you know, that's kind of neat. Ole Kolzig. You know, ironically, it's talked about my dad. My dad was in Washington when they drafted Ole Kolzig. So, you know, but Harrison was an instrumental part of that gold medal winning Canada team. The penalty killing, you know, the territorial defending, he was outstanding for Canada there. So that's what he is. Again, it's amazing. Like, you know, so Harrison Brunick gets drafted in the second round. Do we hear him? But, wow, you know what? His shot isn't great. He doesn't put up a lot of offense. We're celebrating him for what he is, right? Like, right. You know, that's where these narratives to me, and I sit back, and I know you guys do the same thing. You sit back, really? Really? Is this where the narrative is going? And, you know, you kind of, why? But anyway, that's that. Tanner Howe, and I think that when you look at his ability to play with a really gifted player on Connor Bedard, there's really gifted players in Pittsburgh. I would have to imagine that when they drafted him, they were conjuring up images of Jake Guentzel. Because Tanner Howe, you know, Jake wasn't the biggest guy. He was a third-round draft pick, you know, comes in. We all know how good Jake is and, you know, what he's meant to the Pittsburgh Penguins and what the Tampa Bay Lightning are hoping he can mean to them. So, you know, that's my take on those two players. And certainly you're going to get a lot of opportunity in Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh is not loaded with a lot of young prospects, because that's just the nature of trading picks when you're trying to compete for the cup. But, you know, certainly stock in the cupboards again with two players that are competitors and two players that, you know, want to have an effect on the game.
Awesome. Looks like James Hagans of BC is the projected number one pick in 2025. Craig, we wanted to get your thoughts. What do fans have to look forward to in the 25 draft? Who are maybe some of your top players to watch?
I'm going to go with the top three. So you can put a stamp one or two or three, right? James is an outstanding player. I mean, all you have to consider is he broke Nikita Kucherov's record at the U18 tournament for most points in a single tournament. It's really fascinating to watch the young players. And, I was talking to Derek Plant, played on our Stanley Cup team in 1999. So I know the Plant. His father, Bruce, I scouted with him. He won in Hermantown's Minnesota State Championships. Obviously, we see the young boys being drafted. The third one, Victor, is going to the National Team Development Program. And James, and you watch these players come into the program. They come in September of their 16-year age. And they're green as the grass. And then 20 months later, I'm looking at them. I'm going, "Oh my God!" Like they've grown. They developed their game. And I've watched from day. I was in Ann Arbor, living in Ann Arbor from day one of that program. So I've watched that program every iteration of those teams come through. And I feel the same exact way every year at the U18 when I see them, graduating, so to speak. And I thought over the course of the year, and Nick again, he split up Cole and James to spread out the offense. And I think they needed to both adjust in different ways. They were such a complementary pair for one another. But I think we know that what Cole went and did, and we know what James went and did. James is he's an elite competitor. He's got elite skill. He wants to affect the game and so on. He can score, he can make plays. And you think about a player now going to BC, Boston College, and what he's going to do. There's no question in my mind. And I used to call it that, as you guys know, when they were at the National Team Development Program, I call it the 429 train, Perreault, Smith, and Leonard. Well, Smith has opened up a little lane there for James to step in there and play with Perreault and Leonard. It seems to me that, and Greg Brown's a smart guy, it seems to me that that would be a really nice fit. For that top line. And I don't think there's any question James is an outstanding player. Anton Frundell from Sweden is another outstanding center. We talk about defense, right? We listed this year's draft. It feels like centers now are going to carry some play in the upcoming draft. Roger McQueen plays in Brandon. He's a 6'4" right shot center. The other guy I would mention is Porter Martone. Porter Martone was the captain of that U18 team. And you watch how those players, again, I've watched James for a number of years. I've watched Porter, I've watched Anton, and it's going to be a fun year to watch high-end players, go at it. We're going to see him in the link. I don't think there's any question that Porter and James and probably a really good chance that Anton has a chance to play for Sweden at the World Junior Tournament. So I think it's drafts get defined a lot of time by the top end. Those three players, and I'm not excluding Roger in any way, but there's some high-end, forward talent at the top of the 2025 draft. High end.
All right, so we've heard your top guys to watch. I want to kick the can a bit further down the road. Medicine Hat forward Gavin McKenna
Oh, God.
can't be picked until the 26th draft. So, but last season, CHL Rookie of the Year, led the under-18s in goals, won the gold medal to Canada. Let's say he was born in August, and he would have been eligible for the 25 draft. Would he be crack that top three? Would he be number one for you? What can we expect 2 years ago, 2 years from now, when we're talking about Gavin McKenna?
He's the first pick in 2026. I've said this, and I joke about it, Adam. I said, "If there's a better player available for the 2026 draft, just tell me where he is. I'll get on my unicycle and I'll juggle as I go travel to watch that player play, because that's going to be a special player. I'm not gonna eliminate the possibility. I'm gonna say that's a special player." I said this year that if Gavin McKenna was in the draft, he could be the first pick, and that's with Mackin Celebrini. I didn't say that by accident. That's how good Gavin is. Next year, he would be the first pick. As good as James and Porter and Anton are, as good as those guys are, I think Gavin is special. I think that we might be talking generational here. And I don't just put that on a player just because They came in young, let everybody, it's pretty, for me, it's pretty evident when you see a Connor McDavid, okay, that's generational. Even it took me some time to be comfortable using the word with Connor Bedard. But, and I'll take my time here on Gavin. But I don't even think, I think Gavin has so much more to scratch, like in terms of his ability. I saw him 2 years ago in the playoffs when he was 15 years old. And Adam, I was I'd heard about him, I'd known about him. I was just like, wow, like unbelievable. Then you go and watch him at this year in Medicine Hat, you're watching it to U18. Remember, he's essentially, because he's born in late December, he's essentially 2 years younger than just about everybody there. I had not seen a performance at that level at the U18 tournament since Connor McDavid in 2013. And as good as Bedard was in Dallas, I had not seen a performance like that since McDavid, where a player just grabbed everybody's attention and said, "Here we go." And I think he's that good and that special. So I think he would have challenged for one this year. I don't think there's any question he'd do one next year. And I said, if there's a better player in 2026, just tell me where he is.
Yeah, it looks like McKenna has the goods to possibly be another a generational player for
Yeah.
sure, Craig. But look, I know our producer Bob Bender is pushing us along here, but I have got to get this in, and I think as I start talking here, Adam will know which direction I'm going. So, June 28th, 2024, an innocent-looking post via X, the account of @CraigJButton, is a lot more than just a regular tweet. Look, in 95, Craig Button was the Dallas Stars director of scouting. They selected Jerome Iginla 11th overall. There in the tweet, a pic of Iginla between Les Jackson and a very stout and dapper Craig Button with the finest head of hair I've ever seen. Adam, no exaggeration, you know this. I mean, we're talking top-notch groomed flow here. What say you, Mr. Button?
I look back at it. I mean, you think about fashion, right? The double-breasted suit, and kind of, we laugh about it. I asked Jerome's dad when he retired. This was a few years back. We took a picture, and we're standing there, and I said to Jerome's dad, Elvis, I said, Who's aged better over the years? And he had the picture there. He goes, well, he goes, I think you've done pretty good, Craig. And he left it at that. And I, obviously, it's hard for me to believe that 29 years previous, that, 29 years, we draft Jerome and then Teague gets drafted, 29 years later. And that's a generation and a half, right? And I got asked this question so much. What were the similarities? Like, and they're different players. The game is played differently. And I was talking to Jerome at the U18 tournament, and Jerome was, because Jerome's coached, right? And he's coached these young kids. It was interesting because I was with Malcolm Spence's father on the plane back from the U18. But Jerome coached in Boston with the Junior Bruins program when they were living in Boston and coaching his kids. So he played against all those Ontario kids and those Michigan kids. So Jerome had a really good feel for these kids coming up because teams had played against them. And, he'd played against Malcolm Spence and they were talking about different tournaments and whatnot. And you kind of pinch at Jerome's mother, Susan, was at the draft. And I think about the time with Susan and Jerome and how wide-eyed and how excited he was. And certainly teams is the same way. And, Jade is a heck of a player at Brown University. And Joe's coming up. I mean, he'll be in the 2026 draft and certainly another gifted player. So, the Iginla, it's an iconic name in hockey. It's one of those names that has lot that resonates as hockey royalty. And, like the Hughes, when you think about the Hughes name, it's royalty. The Stahl name, the Sutter name, there's a royalty to it. The Iginla name is it has that as well. And I pinch myself thinking, like, I remember that time. I remember, Jerome being drafted and everything. And that was in Edmonton. That was in his hometown where that draft was. So it was even a little bit more special. And the friends that, and I don't know how much this story is known, but the friends that Jerome grew up with, I'm talking like 8, 9, 10, 11, they're still his close friends now. Stardom never changed Jerome. His stardom was something we all got to share in. And boy, Teej has got the elements of wanting to be a difference maker. Those were the similarities between him and Jerome, because Jerome wanted to be a want, Jerome was a winner, and Jerome wanted to be a difference maker, and was. Teej is exactly the same.
This was great, Craig. You truly are the best in the business, and always give us your time to do this each season. You're a great friend to us and a fantastic resource for NHL fans worldwide every season. Thanks for joining us on the final episode of NHL Draft Class for the 23-24 season, buddy.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I mean, the sentiments you just expressed to me, I feel exactly the same about you and Adam. I mean, the work you put in and the dedication you have. I mean, we know that prospects and the draft and knowing where the young players are at is something that the fans are incredibly interested in. So you're the ones that really make it all come together, and to be a small part of it, I feel really honored, and I cherish you guys as friends.
Mike, there's a reason we bring in Craig Button to close up shop, to wrap up the season, and to look ahead a little bit, but because there's nobody better in the business that we work with. Craig's the best. And, you know, anything jump off the page now that we've had time to kind of digest everything that happened in Las Vegas?
Well, you know, it was just interesting speaking with Craig and then rehashing the whole Cole Eiserman situation with the New York Islanders and how Craig, you know, really believes that this is the best goal scorer of this draft class. And, you know, a few years down the road after he gets his time with Boston University, how Cole will develop and grow into the player we all expect him to be. And it was also interesting too, Adam, talking about the Minnesota Wilds selection, number 12, when they traded with the Flyers there to move up a slot and get Zeev Bouyam with that selection, and how Zeev Bouyam, of the, you know, six defensemen that were taken in the top 12, Zeev happened to be Craig's, you know, I guess you can call it the projected, his projected number one among all the defensemen. So he falls to the Wild in that slot, which was outstanding for them.
You know, I agree. We talked about Zeev on our last episode of NHL Draft Class, which you can go back and listen to our instant analysis of the first round after Friday night. So go back and listen to that. And if you're interested about any of the other players that your team picked, absolutely go back and check out some of the episodes we did leading up to the draft on NHL Draft Class, where we talked to some of the top players, the top scouts from NHL Central Scouting, who gave their opinions on what they think the players will end up as. There's no better resource than NHL Draft Class, as well as going back to NHL.com/draft and checking out the stories that I wrote, that Mike wrote, that other writers at NHL.com. If you want to learn more about who your team picked, who could be in your team's future lineup 3, 4, 5 years down the line, listen to NHL Draft Class, go to NHL.com/draft, check out all the great stuff there. But for now, just a quick thank you to all the fans out there who listened, who downloaded, subscribed. Mike, you know, we can't do this without the people listening, enjoying, kind of responding to us on social media, what we do here on NHL Draft Class.
It's great, Adam. And, you know, I get so many direct messages and tweets about, you know, how great Draft Class is. It's just a quick, you know, 40 minutes of just listening to it, going to work, coming home from work, you know, late at night. So, we appreciate that so much, listening to the episodes. We have a lot of fun doing them, so it's great. But before we sign off for this season, Adam, I got to give credit where credit is due. We always do this. You and I, with our final mock drafts, we totaled them up. We correctly picked 27 of the 32 players going in round one, but you happened to pick seven in the exact slot, and it was three more than what I had. So congratulations, my friend.
And to producer Bob Bender, there is our soundbite for the week. You heard it right there. He said it. I don't need to. Everything there is right there in front of you. But also, and I mentioned Bob, very special thanks to Bob Bender, who does his wizardry every episode to make us sound as good as it does. We're going to give him some time off, and Mike and I are also going to take some time off before we leap into the 2025 draft. So for now, thank you to everyone who listened, but NHL Draft Class is dismissed.